We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Thursday, April 25th. And before we get to the top headlines this morning, you may have seen in the news yesterday that there is a new indictment out of the state of Arizona following the 2020 presidential election. And I am one of the individuals that is named. So this is now round two. And while there is not obviously a lot that I'm able to say at this moment, I just want to ask for all of your prayers. And I know that God will continue to be faithful and will continue to talk about his goodness and the Christian and biblical worldview here each and every morning. And I'm going to continue to do the things that God has for me each and every day while I continue to fight for truth. So thank you all so much for your prayers, your support, and I just love being here at AFR. So let's get to the main headline this morning. Speaker Mike Johnson takes the president of Columbia University to task for failing to protect Jewish students. Washington Examiner says this: Speaker Mike Johnson faced chants and boos from pro-Palestinian protesters who attempted to drown out House Republican speeches as they called on Columbia University president to resign over rising anti-Semitism on campus. Johnson was joined by a number of other Republican representatives yesterday to blast Shafiq, the president, for quote-unquote failed leadership and her inability to keep Jewish students safe on campus. This comes as Columbia University is caving, extending the deadlines for student anti-Semitic encampment to disperse, while Princeton University students are preparing to hold an encampment and have a list of demands. This coming from a National Review this morning, that Princeton University students are preparing to establish an anti-Israel protest encampment. And then Harvard students ignore warnings, begin pitching tents in Harvard yard. So what is going on? First, we have a couple of clips from Mike Johnson. This is a part of what he said in his very fiery speech at Columbia, saying that Israel and Jewish students will never stand alone. This is Cut 6.
We are standing here right now on the steps of the Lowe Library. In this very building right behind us, Columbia University once awarded Winston Churchill an honorary degree, and it was Churchill who said, "It is manifestly right that Jews should have a national home where they may be reunited." We believe in that principle. And today I'm here to proclaim to all those who gnash their teeth and demand to wipe the state of Israel off the map and attack our innocent Jewish students this simple truth: neither Israel nor these Jewish students on this campus will ever stand alone.
Representative Chip Roy tweeted this: "I've had my strong disagreements on spending / foreign aid, but I applaud Speaker Johnson for going to Columbia." And Speaker Johnson and other Republicans have now called for no more federal funding to go to any of the universities that are not handling these protests. And then Speaker Johnson also appeared on Fox News with Jesse Waters last night and said that we need order to the chaos. This is Cut 7.
If we don't bring order to this chaos, it could escalate. I mean, clearly, by some estimates, there was a Fox News report a couple of days ago, maybe 200 campuses have some form of this. Columbia stands out because it's one of the great institutions. It has a revered history there, and they're trampling all over it. This is not the expression of free speech. It's not the free exchange of ideas in the public square. This is threatening and intimidating Jewish students because of who they are, because of what they believe. We met with a big group of Jewish students before we went to the campus, and they're hiding in fear. They don't go to class. They're afraid they're going to be assaulted. It's not fair to them. Some of them had to bring federal lawsuits, civil rights violations that are being committed there. And taxpayer dollars should not be going to institutions that are engaging in this kind of nonsense. If you're an administrator on a university campus, your number one job, the first and most obvious, is the safety and security of your students. If you can't guarantee that, we need to find somebody who can.
Joining me now is Chris Woodward, who is a reporter here at the American Family Radio Network and for the American Family News, which you should be following on social media because you always get the headlines from a biblical worldview perspective. And Chris, there was a poll that came out actually, I think it was just yesterday, amidst college protests against Jews on the eve of Passover. Gen Z actually is siding with Hamas. One-third of Gen Z believes Israel does not have the right to exist as a country. This is really shocking. Not just seeing some of these protests. I mean, we're all familiar with BLM and, you know, all of the summer of, you know, mostly peaceful protests. But this is something a little bit different. What do you attribute this type of lack of understanding of Gen Z and why this is happening specifically on some of these more woke elite college campuses?
Yeah, great question. I would blame it on two things: social media, specifically TikTok, and woke teachers and professors who talk about a Palestine as if it's a real country when we all know it's not. The reason I say social media is because just this morning there was a story, I believe it was on Fox, where they were talking about Hamas was trying to reach people through TikTok. And I know that's kind of a public enemy number one, everybody's making it the boogeyman, but there is a lot of gobbledygook that is spread on TikTok, specifically woke things to try to educate and inform people on leftist causes that are complete nonsense. So I would blame it on social media, but also the teachers out there. Teachers have a big influence, and I'm not bashing teachers. We all love teachers. I can do what I do every day because of the men and women that taught me in school coming up. But there are a lot of people out there that are out and out leftists. And it isn't even really new. I remember 20 years ago when I was in college at a school here in a red state, I had a professor take time out of my mass media law class one day to tell me why the Supreme Court should never overturn Roe v. Wade. And 20 years later, I'm still wondering, why in the world did she take time out of a class called mass media law to tell me her two cents about something that had nothing to do at that time with mass media law?
That is so true. And, you know, it's not just distinctly Christian universities that have professors who want to disciple students. I mean, that's a clear mission of, hopefully, of Christian universities, that you want to come from the biblical worldview. But there is this presumption that is utterly false, that secular universities are not coming from any sort of bias, that they're not coming from a worldview perspective. And that could not be further from the truth. You either get the truthful worldview that's predicated on the biblical worldview, or you get a false one. And traditionally, those are secular humanist perspectives. I mean, when I went to Colorado State University, that was my ethics class. I mean, the professor literally said when we walked in the door, I'm not here to impose my view of ethics on you. There's no right or wrong answer. This is just for you to figure out where on the spectrum of ethics you fall. And I'm thinking, then why am I even sitting here taking this class? But it's gotten even worse than that. I mean, this is back, I graduated undergrad in, 2007. So now it's expressly and explicitly Marxist. But I think you're right, Chris Woodward, to point out that social media is largely to blame. And Senator Pete Ricketts, in the aftermath of the TikTok bill being passed, had this to say about why it needs to be banned in the United States, because it's being used by Gen Z to curate news that is expressly anti-American, but also anti-Israel. This is Cut 5.
Well, let's look at where young people are getting their news. Nearly a third of adults 18 to 29 these young people in the U.S. are regularly getting their news exclusively from TikTok. Pro-Palestinian and Hamas, pro-Hamas hashtags are generating 50 times the views on TikTok right now, despite the fact that polling shows Americans overwhelmingly support Israel over Hamas. These videos have more reach than the top 10 U.S. news websites combined. This is not coincidence. The Chinese Communist Party is doing this on purpose. They are pushing this racist agenda with the intention of undermining our democratic values. And if you look at what's happening at Columbia University and other campuses across the country right now, they're winning.
Chris, what do you have to say to that?
Well, I would say he's not the only one that has made comments like that, strong comments that many people agree with. The current governor of Montana has made similar comments, as well as the attorney general of Montana, Austin Knutson. Greg Gianforte is the governor. Knutson is the AG there in Montana. And I bring up Montana because that was the first state in the nation last year to ban TikTok on state government devices and systems. They didn't want that because the concern was China was using that to manipulate people, spy on people, steal their data. And so Montana said, enough of this. We're not going to do it anymore. And both of those guys, at least Knutson, I know for a fact, applied to the federal government yesterday for signing the so-called ban on TikTok. For those not familiar with it, we're giving TikTok a certain amount of time to get another buyer, or we're going to ban it here in the U.S. Biden, to my knowledge, did not issue a statement on the TikTok stuff specifically. He rather applauded legislators for coming up with the funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. So that might give you a little bit of an idea as to where the Biden administration is on a Chinese-owned app accused of manipulating individuals here in the U.S., specifically young people.
Yeah, well, Beijing Biden probably has a little bit of conflict of interest there in in having any sort of comment about TikTok. And we're going to get into that a little bit more in the next segment, because it was really interesting. We have some sound from that as well about the TikTok CEO, what he said about the ban. But I think that this all goes to show, Chris Woodward, that, you know, this is a coordinated effort to try to infiltrate and indoctrinate the minds of young people to have a certain perspective on Israel, on the Middle East conflict, and this whole idea that America first basically means America alone, and that if we are pro-Israel, then that somehow means that we're not necessarily America first, even in some conservative circles. And then worse than that, of course, you get to all of these woke students on campus. And this poll that is from Summit Ministries, and you could go to summit.org to find more about this. And this was the poll I referenced earlier. One of the key insights is that Gen Z voters is also less likely to believe that Hamas is a terrorist group. 81% of American voters overall agree with U.S. government classifying Hamas as a terrorist group, where only 61% of voters 18 to 24. And there are a number of other key insights. But what does that portend about the future of the conservatism and the Republican Party, when the largest voting bloc now, millennials and then rising Gen Zers, have this perspective on Israel?
Yeah, this right here, I think, is why people need to get up off the couch, stop binge-watching things, and actually engage people with the truth, because the mainstream media news outlets, most of them, if not all of them, refer to these protests on campuses that are not all in blue states now. I mean, we had one in Texas yesterday at UT Austin, which is a liberal area, but it's in a red state. News media is largely to blame for what's been going on here, because they often, if not all the time, refer to these protesters as pro-Palestinian protesters or pro-Palestine protesters. Our news service refers to these as pro-Hamas, anti-Israel protesters, because at the end of the day, that is what they are. When you're shouting from the river to the sea and death to Israel, death to America, you're not that person that the media is trying to portray as woe is me, my great-grandparents had to make room for somebody else to get their country back. They're terrorist sympathizers saying horrible things. And by the way, if you are one of the people in Colombia, for example, that is clinging to your free speech rights and saying I should be able to do here and share my voice and pass my views on to other people. You can't boo the other guy that comes on campus to take up for your opponent and say, you're an awful human being. He's doing the same thing.
Well, and this is why, Chris Woodward, it's so important to get news from a biblical worldview perspective. And for the parents out there, make sure that your kids are not on TikTok. They're not absorbing all of this media that is infiltrating and indoctrinating their minds. And Chris Woodward, really appreciate you coming on this morning. Follow him at Reporter Chris W and also American Family News and AFR. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we are talking about the protests across college campuses, but this coming in the wake of the TikTok bill that the Senate has passed and now is going to Joe Biden's desk. And so the Senate has passed the bill designed to ban TikTok unless the app is bought by a U.S. company. This coming from the Post-Millennial. The Senate approved a bill aimed at either prohibiting TikTok or compelling its sale. And so, as I mentioned in the prior segment, the TikTok CEO, Xiao Zaichu, actually took to TikTok to express his feelings about it. And this is an absolutely remarkable statement from the owner of TikTok, which is owned by ByteDance and part of the Chinese Communist Party, that is actually invoking the protections of the First Amendment and the U.S. Constitution to continue to infiltrate and indoctrinate the minds of young people in America. I mean, this is just wild. Listen to this.
Hi, everyone. It's Show here. As you may have heard, Congress passed a bill that the president signed into law that is designed to ban TikTok in the United States. That will take TikTok away from you and 170 million Americans who find community and connection on our platform. Make no mistake, this is a ban. A ban on TikTok and a ban on you and your voice. Politicians may say otherwise, but don't get confused. Many who sponsored the bill admit a TikTok ban is the ultimate goal. It's obviously a disappointing moment, but it does not need to be a defining one. It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom. TikTok gives everyday Americans a powerful way to be seen and heard, and that's why so many people have made TikTok part of their daily lives. Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. We are confident and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts. The facts and the Constitution are on our side, and we expect to prevail again. Our community is filled with people who have found acceptance and compassion, offered inspiration and encouragement, increased their awareness, and broadened their perspectives, ultimately adding more delight and joy to their lives. Our community is also filled with 7 million business owners who have built their livelihoods on TikTok. While we make our case in court, you'll still be able to enjoy TikTok like you always have. In fact, if you have a story about how TikTok impacts your life, we'll love for you to share it to showcase exactly what we're fighting for. Meanwhile, we will continue to invest and innovate to keep our community vibrant, exciting, and safe. Through our U.S. data security efforts, we have built safeguards that no other peer company has made. We have invested billions of dollars to secure your data and keep our platform free from outside manipulation. I can't say this enough. This extraordinary diverse community is what makes TikTok so special, what makes it matter, and what makes it meaningful. And we'll keep working to ensure you will always have the opportunity, the safety, and the freedom to enjoy all TikTok has to offer. Thank you.
Yes, trust the Chinese Communist Party to know what is in the best interests of you Americans that passively absorb all of the worldview of our ridiculous platform. So joining me now to discuss is Jake Denton, who is the tech policy advisor at the Heritage Foundation. And Jake, this is just wild that the CEO of TikTok is openly trying to embrace the U.S. Constitution in the midst of this ban. What is your response to this?
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, you and I have talked about this a great deal over the last year as we've seen this piece of legislation take shape and now make it over the finish line. But they're not being banned for their speech or the speech on the platform. They're being banned for their data collection practices and the way that they're really endangering our national security by collecting vast troves of American consumer data and sending it back to China en masse. You know, he comes out and testifies before Congress right around a year ago. And, you know, he says that data is not flowing back to China. Yet we've had, you know, countless whistleblowers now come out and say that they've received orders from ByteDance as a U.S. employee to send American data back to China. So he lied before Congress. He's lying about the nature of this legislation. And really what was done yesterday by President Biden signing this into law was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and really good distinction, Jake Denton, for between what they're actually being deplatformed for, or you know what the legislative intent actually is. It's not trying to take away any sort of free speech. It's all about the data collection and all of those practices. And so, you know, this just shows how he's creating this totally other narrative so that he's getting all of these millions of users in America on his side. And so where does this go from here? Because there is a deadline now to either divest from ByteDance or they have to get out of the United States. Do you think that they will agree to that, or are we going to see this kind of tied up in litigation over the next several years while TikTok just continues to persist?
Yeah, so yesterday morning, President Biden signed this into law, which officially started the timer for TikTok to divest. You know, they have a roughly 9-month window for this negotiation to occur. And then if it's an ongoing negotiation, it extends to around 12 months, which puts us, you know, potentially right around November for a divestment. Towards the end of November, January, you know, is kind of the time window. And they've made it very clear they have no intent to divest, which, you know, right away essentially affirms the nature of this legislation. If you're more willing to go down with the ship here and not sell when that sale could be upwards of $100 billion, there's obviously something more under the hood. So they're going to fight this. It's probably going to go to the Supreme Court in some manner. And we're going to have to wait and see what the court decides. But it's very clear that this is the, you know, America First position. You have to get rid of platforms like this because they're a threat to our national security and our citizens. And now we just kind of have to play the waiting game.
But and this seems so clear that Congress has the authority to require this in the United States, and particularly for the rationale that you have been describing, Jake Denton. And so fighting this in court seems like it's just delaying the inevitable. But of course, we've seen liberal judges and the liberal wing of the Supreme Court manipulate themselves into pretzels and come up with all kinds of theories to pursue the woke agenda and to try to, you know, carve out exceptions for speech that they like and now perhaps platforms that they like. And so do you see there being a potential for left-wing judges to actually side with TikTok potentially?
Absolutely. I mean, it's no secret that the left loves this platform, from President Biden's campaign having an account and, you know, still posting on there nearly as frequent as, you know, you're the average like eighth grade girl, to, you know, dozens of members of Congress and thousands of advocacy organizations that are pushing the left's message. This is probably their most powerful tool when it comes to the 2024 cycle and really grassroots organization as a whole. So they want to hold on to this. They want to make sure that this is still in their tool chest, you know, moving into 24 and beyond. So I think we'll absolutely see an attempt to, you know, straw man this, turn it into some free speech argument when it's all really about data privacy. It's pretty obvious they've kind of shown their hand what they intend to do with this. And it's just important that we kind of resist this temptation to go down in the mud and argue about the First Amendment when it's obviously a national security issue with the data privacy and surveillance element of this.
And that's a really good point as well, that President Biden's own campaign still has an account on TikTok. And I'm assuming a few other members of Congress still do. I'm not on TikTok because I don't care to give the Chinese Communist Party any of my data. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, all of the with the reauthorization of FISA and all of the other you know, anti-Fourth Amendment stuff, the American government probably has my information, and that's problematic enough. I don't need to go give it to China. But is there a conflict then in what Congress and now President Biden is doing by signing this legislation while still having active accounts and still posting on TikTok to reach voters, ostensibly, that are in terms of the campaign headed to November, because that seems like that's really hypocritical.
Yeah, there's absolutely a conflict, and there's been a conflict throughout the entirety of this legislative battle. You know, you look back several years, there was momentum around the TikTok ban, you know, stemming from a revelation around data privacy, and the Biden administration made a deal with TikTok to ban climate denialism on Earth Day, and they got a little bit of a cushion. And then, you know, they start the TikTok influencer war room, and then the campaign joins. And it's so obvious that they are in favor of retaining the platform for themselves. You saw an extension in the revised version of the bill that passed in this package to the divestment window. And that puts it well beyond the election day time frame. When previously there was a world in which this divestment would have had to have occurred by October. So we saw this window extended. They can now, in theory, use it through Election Day. And it's, you know, obviously a conflict, and it's a huge threat that we kind of are signaling to Americans that, you know, if the president's on it, you can still be on it, when that's obviously a huge risk to their own personal privacy.
Yeah, and so there should be a drive to tell Joe Biden, you know, get off TikTok if you've just signed this legislation. And perhaps that's the call to action this morning, is to call your member of Congress and ask, are they still on TikTok? And if so, why? And ask them to themselves divest from this platform and not use it. While they're saying that no other Americans should be on it. But what we've seen, Jake Denton, on the left is that even if we as America are successful in either having TikTok divest or it's banned in America, I mean, that's not going to stop the Chinese Communist Party. That's not going to stop the woke Marxist leftists from trying to use platforms to infiltrate and indoctrinate the minds of young people. And so is there another potential avenue on the horizon that may replace TikTok in terms of just the mass attraction to young people? And we're seeing, as I mentioned in the last segment, a lot of the Gen Zers that are on TikTok and getting a lot of their news, as several members of the Senate mentioned, that are becoming very anti-Israel based on the curated content that is being shown to them. So where is potentially the next avenue, even if we don't have TikTok anymore?
Yeah, well, you know, the Chinese Communist Party is really flooding the information environment, especially in the run-up to the 2024 election. Microsoft has actually put out a great deal of pretty good reporting on this, that the CCP has invested in an influencer network in every single language spoken around the world, and they're essentially pushing CCP messaging into local audiences in their own voice, you know, with their own local context, so that it seems very, you know, local and friendly, but in reality, it's coming from Beijing. And I think regardless of the platform of choice, they're going to continue to try and push this, whether it's Instagram, X, any of these places. And so it's part of a broader conversation of just like becoming aware that, you know, these social media platforms are part of the battleground in this new Cold War we're fighting with China. And then, you know, staying on guard, we need to look at Tencent, you know, the video game platform, and their chat-based things like WeChat, and how they're beginning to proliferate here in the States as well. This is really just the first domino to fall in a much longer battle of retaining our digital sovereignty.
Yeah, and this is why, you know, the Digital Bill of Rights and some of these other things from conservatives and Republican groups, and even, you know, and the Trump campaign, you know, all of that is very good. And this is a good, at least, first step for Congress to take, and even for President Biden to sign this. And is there other legislation that is also on the horizon dealing with some of this other issue of digital sovereignty?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're going to continue to see this app-based kind of infiltration occur at scale. And so something we've been big proponents of at Heritage is a risk-based framework that essentially would do the same style of forced divestment or delisting if it meets a certain criteria from one of these foreign adversary states. So that's something that, you know, we're going to continue to fight for here in Washington. And then I think you're also going to see these things emerge within the context of artificial intelligence. export controls, making sure that China isn't getting access to our precious hardware to build very subversive pieces of technology that they'll sell back here in the States. So this is going to continue to evolve. And, next Congress is probably where really it's going to be a major battleground for this type of legislation.
Wow. And in just the last about 2 minutes I have with you, Jake Denton. So, for parents who are very concerned about TikTok, what would your advice be for reasons why we should on our own just divest from TikTok, not use it, and have parental controls at a minimum for a lot of these platforms?
Yeah, it's a really hard time to be a parent. You're obviously outgunned when it comes to fighting these big tech companies. But really, the bottom line is these apps, whether it be TikTok or Instagram, are going to come back to haunt your child. They're posting all sorts of things, commenting constantly, and it's really building up a dossier, a digital footprint that could be used against them for really anything. And when it's China collecting that data and storing it, everything from their biometric data to their voice, all these different things, there's really no telling how this could be used against them in, tomorrow all the way to 30 years into the future. So it's really about protecting their future, making sure that, they're not making an ill-informed decision while they're in elementary school that could kill their career when they're an adult. So giving them a safe foundation to grow upon. And I think it's really the responsibility of the parent now to make sure they're safe, because our government has dropped the ball. A solution is downstream. We might see it later, but for now, it's really incumbent upon the parent to protect the child.
Absolutely. So well said. Jake Denton from the Heritage Foundation. Always so appreciate your insights and the work that you and the Heritage Foundation and others are doing on Capitol Hill to ensure that data privacy and digital sovereignty still exists, even in this just massively social media camera driven Big Brother culture. And, I'm just so grateful that, Facebook had barely started to exist and be a thing when I was in college. I can't imagine the landscape of growing up with this type of social media and the posts that then, end up following you through your career. It is really, really difficult. And parents need to be very wise in encouraging and requiring kids to make sure that they understand and are following best practices here. So again, Jake Denton, really appreciate it. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And in case you did not realize that today is Thursday, April 25th, the Supreme Court is going to hear oral argument this morning at 10 a.m. in the case of Trump versus the United States. This is the presidential immunity case, so you can always stream that at supremecourt.gov live, or you can go to C-SPAN, which, as you all know, is my preferred outlet. I know they have all of the panda cams that are in Congress and so forth, but they actually do a pretty good job of at least just showing what is going on in our government. And they have a stream that actually shows the photos of the advocates or the justices as they are speaking, because it is only audio. We don't get any video from the courtroom. So that is happening today, and I'm sure there will be a lot of commentary online and later on here on AFR. And let's tackle one more story before getting to my next guest. So this also coming from Town Hall this morning, hundreds of athletes sign a letter to the NCAA urging them to allow biological men to compete against women in athletics. So the crazy on college campuses continues and in sports. So according to Town Hall, more than 400 current and former Olympic, professional, and collegiate athletes signed a letter to the NCAA urging them to not ban so-called transgender athletes from women's sports. Separate letters from over 300 academics and about 100 advocacy groups were also sent to the NCAA. Among the signatories were far left-wing activist athletes like Megan Rapinoe and Sue Bird. The issue of transgender athletes competing against women garnered national attention when Will, quote-unquote, Leah Thomas, competed on the women's team at the University of Pennsylvania after competing on the men's team for 3 years and going from about 400th place to then first place, beating out Riley Gaines. And I have been told that Riley Gaines will be a guest today on today's issue, so you definitely want to tune in for that. Or if you're listening to the podcast version of this show, you can also, of course, get the podcast version of today's issues at AFR.net. All right. Well, according to the Washington Post, a new study reveals that plant-based meat alternatives may not offer heart health benefits. This is really no shock to any of us that have been following these stories of just totally manufactured and overproduced food that is just infiltrating America. And there's also a study that has come out from The Blaze. The headline is great. Why are Americans so fat? A radical group of online scientists has a theory. And this is, of course, due to a lot of the products and the things that the overproduction that we're not eating real food anymore. And so going back to the Washington Times, a recent study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition suggests that opting for vegan meat products such as faux sausages and burgers does not provide a clear advantage for heart health and may even be associated with higher blood pressure in some cases. So joining me now is Raw Egg Nationalist, who is anonymous on social media for his own protection. He wrote the book, The Eggs Benedict Option, and has been following all of these health and not health stories for a long time. So Raw Egg, thanks so much for joining again. And I'm sure that this headline did not surprise you.
It's great to be back speaking to you, Jenna. No, the headline didn't surprise me at all. This is exactly what I would expect from this kind of study. So it was a small intervention study, if you will. A group of people were split in two, and one half got to continue their meat, their diets that contained meat, and the other half substituted the meat that they were eating for this plant-based meat stuff like Impossible Burger, Beyond Meat, etc. And what they found at the end of 8 weeks was that actually the group who ended up eating the plant-based meat substitutes had significantly higher resting blood glucose levels. Now, if your resting blood glucose levels increase, that means that you're basically on the road to diabetes, and that's a very, very bad thing. I mean, diabetes is associated with increased all-cause mortality. It's not nice having to take insulin, etc. It's associated with obesity. So, I mean, this isn't a surprise to me, for the simple fact that plant-based meat substitutes are not substitutes for meat. They are a totally different class of food. What they are is ultra-processed food. They're no different from ultra-processed chicken nuggets or anything you'd buy wrapped in plastic in the convenience aisle in a supermarket, take from the freezer, etc. It's not a like-for-like substitution.
And this then goes into this theory of the Blaze Media, you know, why are Americans so fat and overprocessed, as you're describing, seems to be the answer. But this statistic was actually quite surprising to me. The The account that is being interviewed in this Blaze Media piece says that the first mystery is the epidemic of obesity itself. For most of history, the obesity rate was about 1 to 3%, even when people had all the food they wanted. Today, many countries have a 40% obesity rate or higher. Even in lean countries like Italy, France, and Sweden, the obesity rate is around 20%. And it goes on to say the second mystery is how quickly the shift occurred. In 1975, there wasn't a single country on earth with an obesity rate higher than 15%.
Yeah, this is crazy. So this is a well-known or quite well-known blog called Slime Mold Time Mold. That's as I say, it's quite well-known. I've known about it for a while, been interested in the stuff that the people behind it have been writing. They say basically that the study of obesity is the study of mysteries. So it's very, very difficult to settle on a single satisfying explanation for why people have suddenly got so fat. You can't just say it's because people are eating more. And in fact, actually, there's conflicting evidence. There are some studies that show that people are eating significantly more, and there are other studies that suggest that actually people aren't really eating very more. But to go back to this study of processed food, I think what we can the impossible meat, the plant-based meat substitutes, what we can say, I think, is that people are eating very different kinds of foods. Now, before about the middle of the 20th century, before the 1950s, people weren't eating processed foods because processed foods basically didn't exist. I mean, the first real processed food was margarine. So that was that's an enriched form of vegetable oil. That was created really sort of around about the turn of the 20th century. But it wasn't until the 1950s that you started getting food wrapped in plastic that you could just take home and stick in the oven or eventually stick in a microwave and heat up. And processed food is a totally different kind of food from the foods that humans have eaten for the vast majority of the 200,000 years that modern humans have been around. But there are other things as well. It's not just the food, and this slime mold, time mold blog talks about, for example, the pervasive nature of industrial chemicals, of pollution, and you know these chemicals, many of which are estrogenic. They they mimic the female hormone estrogen in the human body. They're also obesogenic, and what that means is that they encourage obesity. So they do things like they slow the body's metabolic rate, which means that you expend fewer calories during the day. And so actually you can put on weight without eating more. Your body's needs decrease. You're still eating the same amount of food. Suddenly you're in a caloric surplus and your body starts to put on fat. I mean, it's a very complicated subject that actually does require quite a kind of nuanced understanding of the kind of changes that have taken place over the last 100 years, not only in the way that we eat and the things that we eat, but also in the way that we live and the kind of stresses, including environmental pollution, that we're exposed to on a daily basis.
And that all makes a lot of sense. And it's also fascinating to me to observe, especially millennials and Gen Z, who have grown up in this type of environment where it is overproduced food, but also the broader environment, as you're describing, raw egg nationalist. And yet seeing, and this is, this is a bit of a generalization, but, seeing that on average, there are a lot more males that are very skinny and don't have as much of a robust figure as if you look at photos of for example military recruits even in the 1940s and 50s and you look at just the average type, and then if you look at the average female, to see that it's just a little more corpulent and to see that it's not what reflected also that same time period. And so is that a hormonal issue that is affecting both genders?
Yes, I think that there is a hormonal aspect to it, absolutely. Like I say, we're bathing in chemicals, estrogenic chemicals in particular, on a daily basis. They're in virtually everything, every kind of modern convenience that we use. They're in personal care products, things like phthalates, bisphenols, triclosan, all sorts of really nasty substances that we're just exposed to all the time and people don't know about it. We're exposed while we're in the womb as well. And the womb, you know, when a fetus is gestating in the womb, this is a crucial developmental window where the balance of hormones that a fetus is exposed to will actually determine its development for life. You know, a young boy in the womb, if he's exposed to estrogenic chemicals, will suffer for the rest of his life, potentially from reduced testosterone, reduced penis size, reduced fertility, all sorts of stuff. I mean, I think it's definitely a hormonal thing, but like I say, there are other things going on as well. It's really a question actually of how we're living around the, you know, across the board. And it's even things like exposure to artificial light at night, because that makes people sleep worse. And when you sleep worse, your hormonal profile is affected. And we know that people are sleeping worse, that people are exposed to blue light in particular, not only from LEDs and lights within the home, but particularly from computers and mobile phones, and which we're using at unprecedented rates. You know, they didn't exist 30 years ago, not like they do now. And so, yes, I mean, it's actually fundamentally, I think, a question of whether modern life is good for human beings or not.
Yeah, and this is just so discouraging in some sense to see that, you know, there are so many different factors that combine. It's not just a matter of, you know, having a good diet and exercise as it might have been 50 or 60 years ago, but, you know, so many other factors considered. So how do you advise the average person to at least become aware of some of these factors that we can control and then make best practices decisions in the midst of an overprocessed and overstimulated environment?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we all have to face is that we can't fully solve this problem. So you're not going to be able to reduce your exposure totally to harmful, stressful stimuli. Modern life is stressful. You know, you're going to be exposed to blue light. You're going to be exposed to industrial chemicals. You might have to eat bad food occasionally, etc. But what you can do is you can significantly reduce your exposure to these negative factors. One of the best things that you can do is start to prepare your own food at home. Don't buy processed food. Learn how to cook, prepare your own food from whole, fresh, ideally local ingredients. Fix your sleep schedule, reduce your dependence on plastics in particular, because plastics are one of the main sources of exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals and obesogens. I think those are three things actually that if you do those things and exercise, get out, move your body, then you'll be going a long way towards fixing your health.
And I'm speaking with Ra Egg Nationalist. You can follow him on social media and also read his book, The Eggs Benedict Option. Really good book. And, you know, and some of these things, too, I mean, it seems like there is just such a prolific trend towards having what people would like to believe is a healthy diet, but you can be very unhealthy in doing that. Like, for example, I eat gluten-free because I learned back in high school that it wasn't actually celiac in the traditional sense of actually, you know, being allergic to the grain itself, but more the bleach that just it will trigger migraines for me. And so I primarily eat gluten-free, but you can do that in a way, even if I'm, you know, getting rid of a lot of the bleached overprocessed products, like most all-purpose flour, you can still get so many overproduced gluten-free alternatives that really aren't actually helping solve the problem that, you know, my nutritionist originally said, you know, find things that are naturally gluten-free that don't have bleach in it. And I look at those ingredients now, but it seems like there's a lot of ways that even good diets, or if you want to go, you know, low carb or high protein in some of these, that you can still do in a way that is not actually healthy. So Rotting Nationalists, we're already out of time, and I really wanted you to respond to that, but we'll have you on again, and I so appreciate your commentary. Again, you can follow Rotting Nationalists, who's been talking about all of these things that are affecting us, and we live more of a sedentary lifestyle as well compared to 50 or 60 years ago. So we need to ensure that we understand, you know, our body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and we need to view everything that we do health-wise as stewarding our bodies for the Lord as Christians. So you can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. Again, so appreciate your prayers and your support for me and this network. Make it a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.